Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam from the second canto, ninth chapter, entitled Answers by Citing the Lord's Version, text number 5. Saha, he, Adideva, the first demigod, Jagatam, of the universe, Paraha, supreme, Guru, spiritual master, Svadisnyam, his lotus seat, Astaya, define the source of it, Sishikshaya, for the matter of creating the universal affairs, Aikshata, began to think, in that matter, na, could not, ajigacha, understand, drisam, the direction, atra, therein, sammatam, just the proper way, prapancha, material, Nirmana, construction. Vidi, process. Yaya, as much as. Bhave, should be. Translation. Lord Brahma, the first spiritual master, supreme in the universe, could not trace out the source of his lotus seat. And while thinking of creating the material world, he could not understand the proper direction for such creative work, nor could he find out the process for such creation. Purport. This verse is the prelude for explaining the transcendental nature of the form and the abode of the Lord. In the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, it has already been said that the Supreme Absolute Truth exists in his own abode without any touch of the deluding energy. Therefore, the kingdom of God is not a myth, but factually a different and transcendental sphere of planets known as the Vaikuntha. This will also be explained in this chapter. Such knowledge of the spiritual sky, far above this material sky, and its paraphernalia can be known only by dint of devotional service or bhakti yoga. The power of creation by Lord Brahma was also achieved by Bhakti Yoga. Brahmaji was bewildered in the matter of creation, and he could not even trace out the source of his own existence. But all this knowledge was fully achieved by him through the medium of Bhakti Yoga. By Bhakti Yoga one can know the Lord, and by knowing the Lord as the Supreme, one is able to know everything else. One who knows the Supreme knows everything else. This is the version of all the Vedas. Both the spiritual master and both the first spiritual master. Even the first spiritual master of the universe was enlightened by the grace of the Lord. So who else can attain perfect knowledge of everything without the mercy of the Lord? If anyone desires to seek perfect knowledge of everything, he must seek the mercy of the Lord, and there is no other means. To seek knowledge on the strength of one's personal attempt is a sheer waste of time. Om Ajnana Kinnarandasya Jnana Salakya Chakshurun Nimitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Dvaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudevi Gaura Bhaktavinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Bhagavan, known as Adideva, or the original demigod, the origin of all the devas, is also known as Jagatam Paro Guru, the first spiritual master, supreme in the universe. Lord Brahma is the most intelligent person in the entire universe. There is no one who has as sharp an intelligence as Lord Brahma. He has the greatest intellect, and his body is practically made of pure intelligence. So no one is more qualified by dint of his own intelligence to understand the absolute truth than Lord Brahma. And yet, even Lord Brahma could not understand the source of his existence. Therefore, it is clear that no mundane philosopher, no speculative philosopher within this universe has a chance. It is just not possible. So, therefore, one can only know the Supreme Lord by his mercy. Here it is stated that Lord Brahma, by devotional service, attained knowledge of the process of creation and of his position. But even devotional service is depending on Krishna. First of all, we are receiving devotional service by the mercy of Krishna through his devotee. And subsequently, the result of that devotional service depends on the mercy of Krishna. Because devotional service is never a mechanical process. One cannot say that if I simply do a certain amount of devotional service, then automatically there will be a particular type of result. Because the result of devotional service is simply that Krishna is pleased. And when Krishna is pleased, he will bestow his mercy. And then the Lord becomes revealed, then transcendental knowledge is revealed, and then we understand things as they are. Then we understand ourselves. Without Krishna, we don't know ourselves. It is not possible. Just like one cannot see oneself without the light of the sun, in the same way one cannot actually see his own self without the mercy of Krishna. So, in this way, knowledge depends totally on Krishna. But devotional service is a means to attract the mercy of Krishna. And that is, and therefore, it is important. Devotional service is transcendental. It is of a spiritual nature and therefore infallible. Therefore, devotional service will always produce results. There is no question that one can think that for some devotional service may work, but for me it didn't work so well. That is not a fact. Devotional service always is successful. There is always spiritual advancement. And more than we think, more than we are aware of, the amount of blessings that we are accumulating is extraordinary, very, very great. We can see the potency being described of so many various elements, just like the Tulasi leaf. It is said that all the holy places, all the tirthas of the entire universe are present within one Tulasi leaf. So we don't think of it like that. We just take that to love. I just saw one in my water and was thinking, I was careful not to get it in my throat because it's sometimes a little difficult to speak, but when you have a tulasi leaf in the throat. But after saying this, I think I should go for it. So.
missed it. Maybe next time, better luck.
So, in this way, there are so many blessings, that we are receiving and that we are not just so conscious of. We are not thinking that we have all the blessings of all the members of the entire parampara upon us. At the time of taking initiation, we are not necessarily aware of what is happening here, what is really taking place. We are not seeing that the blessings of all the previous acharyas are just descending upon us. We are not seeing. We don't know how important that is, because the blessings of a great personality are manifold. Such blessings can uplift us in many ways. The blessings of the great personalities come in the form of instructions and in the form of transcendental knowledge. They also come in the form of, well, a more mystic type of mercy. Simply just Narada Muni was taking the remnants of the Bhaktivedantas, and the result of taking these remnants was that he became a great devotee, just by taking these remnants. Exactly how it works, nobody knows, because we can't perceive. It is mystic. So like that, mercy has a very practical aspect in terms of the of knowledge and instructions. Then it has a mystical aspect in terms of some blessing that can have great effect. In many ways, the great devotees are blessing us. They bless us with their glands, they bless us with their touch, they bless us simply by purifying places. It's like whenever I'm in Bombay, with great pleasure I walk on Jewel Beach, because it is a sacred place, without a doubt. The holy sand of Jewel Beach is not to be underestimated. Prabhupada walked there so many times. Yeah, so it's not just any beach. Recently, it was just described how Srila Prabhupada was present there in Bombay in early days on the land at Juhu, and there were just a few houses, a few old buildings with tenants on that land, and eventually the devotees managed to purchase one of these houses that were on the land. And then Prabhupada stayed there, and then Prabhupada gave a series of darshans on the roof of that building in Bombay. And on one such occasion, the discussion went towards Gandhi. And Prabhupada was saying, he said, Gandhi, he said, was such a wonderful person. Such a wonderful person. Prabhupada said, I loved him very much. I loved him very much and just appreciated him very much. So the next morning, Prabhupada went on Juhu Beach, and he walked much further than usual, much further, all the way till the end. And then as they came very far on the beach, at one point Prabhupada folded both hands and sort of made a pranam gesture. And then when the devotees looked, they saw that there was a statue of Gandhi at some distance from Prabhupada. So one can see how Prabhupada, by speaking about Gandhi, became so full of appreciation of Gandhi that night and was saying, yes, I loved him very much. That the next day, that sentiment still carried forward. And Prabhupada then walked along the beach extra far to offer his pranams to the Murti, the statue of Gandhi. So Other times Prabhupada had said that Gandhi was the saint amongst politicians and the politicians amongst saints. And in general, we don't really count Gandhi amongst the Mahatmas, right? Not in the Vaishnava tradition. Because to be a Mahatma, one has to actually follow the Gita. One has to dedicate his whole life to the Gita, yes, which he didn't entirely do. But Prabhupada, on this particular occasion, saw his credits. Right? He gave him credit, which was due to him, because he did actually a great sacrifice. And Prabhupada saw that, and therefore gave him the appreciation that he was due. Although we would not agree to give him the title Mahatma from a strict perspective of how it is meant to be used from a Vaishnava perspective. But Prabhupada gave him all credit. So just by hearing such a story, there is a great blessing, because Srila Prabhupada is, in the way he was acting, he's constantly teaching. So hearing a Prabhupada story is not just inspirational, it's not just nice, but it's a blessing. It gives us an insight as to how to act. It gives us an insight of what we should be. So at every moment, a spiritual master in any aspect gives us an idea of how we should be. At least a spiritual master of the caliber of Srila Prabhupada definitely, in all his actions, in every moment of his existence, is acting as a teacher, is acting in a most merciful manner. Nothing is just without meaning. Just when Prabhupada became angry, one could see that he was the instrument of Krishna's anger. Prabhupada chastised the asuras for slaughtering cows, or politicians for exploiting people. He chastised the impersonalists in various ways. And in this way, Prabhupada represented the anger of Krishna, because there was no anger in Prabhupada that was not fully dedicated to Krishna. There was nothing like that. If Prabhupada was getting annoyed, it wasn't that he was lacking tolerance. It was simply that he was exposing the mode of ignorance. Yes. Prabhupada was not tolerating so many things. And yet, it is said that the pure devotee must be more tolerant than a tree. But Prabhupada was sometimes intolerant. When devotees would slam doors, he was intolerant. Yes. He would say something about it. Well, you know, it's not so bad. The noise of a door slamming is a little disturbing. But Prabhupada was very disturbed by slamming doors. But we take it that he was not just disturbed by the noise, but that he was disturbed by it because it was a symptom of carelessness, a symptom of inattentiveness, a symptom, therefore, of the mode of ignorance, a symptom of failing to be in the mood of a servant, because a servant should not cause disturbance. So Prabhupada saw everything. He saw reality on a deeper level. We cannot even understand how deep he saw, but definitely deeper than on the surface, and therefore his intolerance of banging doors, especially Mayapur was a place because there were so many doors, and lots of wind. So there was always banging doors. And Prabhupada commented on it many times. Yes. So, my point is that whatever Prabhupada did, he was the instrument of Krishna. Because of his constant dedication to Krishna, of his very concentrated dedication to Krishna. In the Nectar of Devotion, it is said, Sandrananda Visheshatma, that one's devotional service becomes very dense, very dense. In the beginning, it is very interspersed, very spread out, like we can compare it to gas and metal. In gas, the molecules are very far apart, and in metal, they're very dense. So metal becomes very hard. So, in this way, the Prabhupada's dedication to Krishna is very dense. I was just thinking about it this morning, because I came back from a little world tour and did some. I gave lectures, I did festivals, I did so many things, and now I'm just in the first stage. I'm just thinking of sleeping. That's what I'm thinking. I came here to Karsana's Ghat because there's that nice bed up there, and it was already in my mind before I left South Africa. I was thinking somewhere along the line I'm going to go. You know what I'm going to do? I'm not going to go anywhere in ISKCON, because in ISKCON there is no peace. So let me go to the DBT. Everything works, and everything is together, and it's right, and it works. So, nice. So that's where I'm at. But you see that Prabhupada was just going on. Because Prabhupada would sort of sleep a few hours at night and a few hours at the day at most. Right? Time differences also didn't make much difference, because when the night turned into day, that's what happens. See, if you go to Australia, then 9 hours time difference. Well, that means night turns into day, basically. And that means that you feel like sleeping in the day. But for Prabhupada, it was not a problem because he was sleeping two at night, two in the day, so at most. So then, when night turned to day, nothing changed. So he did well. But other people who sleep more at night, they don't do that well. In fact, then it's a big adjustment. So Prabhupada somehow or other managed all these things so nicely. And then, in the middle of his travels, he was able to write. It's very difficult. These things, writing seems to be something that is meant for digging yourself in a room, locking the doors, and see no people, and sort of go in a very regulated schedule, and then it works. Just like here in the BBT, they used to have those little cubicles with a few devotees in there, a translator and an editor. And then at night, the big computer would slurp up whatever they had translated during the day. And they were just peacefully there in those little rooms. That was the idea. Yeah. In Sweden also, there's nowhere else to go. Yeah. Especially in the winter, you can't go out for a walk, not very long. So they were forced to be in their little cells and translate. And it worked. So, somehow or other, we see how everything that Srila Prabhupada did was just an arrangement of Krishna, because he was that transparent. We can see that Lord Brahma, as the first spiritual master, is also very much like that. Lord Brahma's entire existence is very much connected to the Supreme Lord. There is not such a gap between Lord Brahma and the Supreme Lord as there exists between us and the Supreme Lord. We have to bridge a huge gap. We are far away from Krishna. But Lord Brahma is very close to Krishna. Due to his extraordinary piety, he is very, very close to Krishna. And therefore his whole appearance is very close to Krishna. He appears on the lotus flower that comes directly from the navel of the Lord. Lord Brahma, therefore, in the 10th canto, when he was offering prayers to the Lord, said to the first thing he said to the Lord, he said, "You are both my father and mother, because I took birth from you." But still, Lord Brahma had to also surrender to the Supreme Lord. Then he became the empowered instrument of the Supreme Lord. Any living being can become the empowered instrument of the Supreme Lord. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is describing that empowerment means that one becomes empowered with the chit and the ananda potency, or with the knowledge potency and with the happiness potency. That is what empowerment means. Then we are empowered, when we are in knowledge and when we are in transcendental bliss. That is empowerment. Until one is there, one is not empowered. One is not really on the spiritual platform. One may practice, one may engage in devotional service in practice, but until we have reached this stage where we are situated in knowledge and situated in transcendental bliss, in one sense, we are not yet really situated in devotional service. Real bhakti truly means that we begin to become deeply rooted in knowledge about Krishna. And of course, we understand that everything is simply related to Krishna. Parashyasakti-vividayiva-suryate. We know that anything is Krishna. All the energy that exists is ultimately Krishna's energy, part and parcel of Krishna. Nothing exists without Krishna. Therefore, forgetfulness of Krishna is truly not at all realistic. It is not realistic. But somehow or other, the living being is prone to forget Krishna. That is interesting. It is stated in the beginning of the Bhagavatam how everything and then it said tejo varimrnam yata vinimiyo yata trisargam vishya. It is stated that even the demigods muyanti yat suryaha, even the demigods are covered by illusion. Everything coming from the Supreme Lord, everything emanating from the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord, at the same time, in his personal form, is behind his energy. That personal form is truly the form that we are trying to connect with. So therefore, we are always seeking for Krishna. Always seeking for a connection with Krishna. We have to do something about that connection with Krishna. It's not automatic. Never can we take it for granted that it is automatic. We have to make an endeavor to make our connection with Krishna again and again. It is compared to bathing. One has to do it again and again. It's never that one can say, "I took bath yesterday, and therefore I did it." No. It is an ongoing thing. Again and again one must make the connection with Krishna. That is Krishna consciousness. Therefore, Krishna consciousness is active. It is an active, samadhi is active. It is absorption in devotional service is active. It's constantly being engaged in the service of the Lord. That is the case. But that is difficult because we are quite far away from Krishna in this age. We are very deeply influenced by the modes of material nature, especially by the mode of ignorance. Therefore, we are always disturbed, we are not fortunate, we don't have good fortune in this age. So difficulty is bound to come because we don't have good fortune. So no one can be surprised when here it goes again. Right? And one more time, misery has just arrived. What can we say? Mandabhagya. We don't have good fortune. And then slow-witted and a short duration of life. These are the symptoms that we are facing. So, therefore, our desires to be happy in the material world are, not really very much supported, unfortunately. In previous yugas it was better, obviously, when there was, in the kingdom of Lord Ramachandra, no disease or something like that. Okay, that was pretty good. And so when no son would die before his father, right, that was all like, that saved a lot of misery. So, but in this age all these things are very prominent, very prominent. So, therefore, happiness is not so easily achieved. If you go around and you ask people about their health, it's shocking that the people that you're just looking at every day, what's wrong with them? You know, it's amazing if you just start asking people. This one has a hole in his heart. That one, you know, has half a kidney. Another one has half a brain. And what shall we say? You know, in this age, it's like that. Right? Not so easy. That is a fact. The principle is the same for Lord Brahma as for us. The very principle is the same. It doesn't matter that we are not as qualified as Lord Brahma. The process of bhakti is so potent that whether one is qualified or not qualified, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter. Just as like when you have very good soap, you know, a very good washing detergent, it doesn't really matter if the clothes have just been used on the football field or if they are not very dirty. If with that washing powder they go into the washing machine, they will come out, that t-shirt will be sparkling white. It will be, says the TV commercial. So, that is a fact, right? So in the same way, the holy name or devotional service will act. Devotional service always acts. Any connection with devotional service acts. But this is very important for us to kind of remember, because that will give us that will strengthen our motivation. When we realize that devotional service always acts, then we become stronger. Then our faith is stronger. So, because faith, we must be convinced that this process will produce the results, that it will work. Not that we think, oh, but what can be done? My karma is so bad. It is so bad that, in my case, little hope. Others, yes, but in my case, no hope. But that is not a fact. Because on Krishna's lotus feet, there is that thunderbolt, which is there to show to those who say, but my karma is bigger than Mount Everest. I've got such a pile of karma. It is insurmountable. then Krishna's thunderbolt smashes it to pieces. Goodbye, karma. Okay, so karma is not an objection. Therefore, we can never think that, I am too disqualified for devotional service. No one is disqualified for devotional service. As soon as we say that, of course, I believe in the Bhagavad Gita, of course I believe in devotional service, of course I believe Krishna is the Supreme Lord and devotional service to Him is the best thing to do, but what can I do? I just can't do it. No, that is not actually a realistic way of reasoning. Because the truth is that then we don't have faith in bhakti. Because then we think bhakti has no potency. Then we think that I am so fallen, bhakti cannot cure me. I'm incurable. That means that we think the medicine is not very strong. But the medicine is so strong that no one is incurable. The process of bhakti can cure the rit rogam, the material disease in the heart of any living being, including us. So this is important, therefore, for our faith. And that will give us motivation. If our faith is strong, yes, it will work. Then we are motivated to keep on trying, even if our performance is not so great. The performance is not great because of Manda Sumanda Matiyo, because we are Kali Yuga types. That's why. But it doesn't matter. If we carry on, it will act. And success guaranteed. Otherwise, money back. What that money back would be, well, what can we say? You get your money back anyway in Krishna consciousness, because whatever you've invested, you get more than you get invested. Right? You get your money back with interest. Whatever sacrifice we make, whatever we give up, we get more. That is what Dhruva Maharaj realized. He realized that I made such a sacrifice and actually I was just desiring broken pieces of glass. What I got is much greater than I could imagine. So this is devotional service. The reward is greater than anyone can imagine. Therefore, the most important point of this particular narration is that we are looking at Brahma as a role model. Otherwise, what is the... Brahma, if we just look at Brahma as he is so great, he is so exalted, he is so amazing. I mean, Brahma, the creator, Brahma, the first spiritual master, Brahma, such a long duration of life, Brahma is just amazing. Sometimes we can elevate someone to a level of so high that we cannot see him anymore. And that he becomes like so great that he cannot be followed anymore. It is sometimes done to Srila Prabhupada also. Srila Prabhupada, yes, he is such a pure devotee. He is so pure. He is so amazing. He is like inconceivable. He is supernatural. He is just extraordinary. And therefore, what he could do, but nobody else can do. And in this way, we've again found an excuse that, therefore, I cannot become a pure devotee. But no, we can also become a pure devotee. Everyone can become a pure devotee. And Srila Prabhupada simply particularly stressed this this thing about one life, going back to Godhead, one life. When Prabhupada gave initiation, we have to understand that the initiation that Prabhupada gave had a special blessing. which may not always be there in initiation in the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. Because Prabhupada had a prayer. He had a prayer along with the initiation. Prabhupada was the first one who asked for a spoken vow. And prior to that, we don't see that in our sampradaya. It is not that in the case that Lokanath Goswami asked Narottam Das Thakur and what are the four regulative principles? And Narottam said, Narottam, how many rounds are you promising to chant for the rest of your life without fail? And Narottam said, a minimum of 16 rounds every day. And then Lokananda Swami gave him the beats and so on. It wasn't exactly like that. Prabhupada put it in that form. Previously the mantra was given and beats were given. That was there. But not so much more. But it was understood that one had to follow the injunctions of the scriptures, and there was knowledge of the scriptures, and therefore people knew that you had to follow the four regulative principles. They knew that you were supposed to eat no meat, fish, or eggs. They knew that you were supposed to take no garlic and onions. They knew that. They knew that you were not supposed to drink tea. They knew it very well. Even today in India, the people actually know. If you tell them that actually tea was introduced by the British, by these Britishers, and in the beginning they were not even charging for it, and they're giving it out for free. If you tell people in India, they say, yes, 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 this is true. This is true. Actually, yes, this is true. They know it. So they know. These things were known. But nowadays, of course, it must be spelled out and spoken out loud. Because if we don't say it out loud, and say, well, I didn't promise that. Sometimes people forget to say the fish. They say, no meat, So forget it, Sorry. And to say the whole thing, what swims in the water. Everything. So, Srila Prabhupada, he initiated people with this particular 16 rounds and four regulated principles. But that was not everything. Srila Prabhupada had a prayer visit, and several times he says like that. He says that if the spiritual master says you chant 16 rounds full of four regulated principles, then you will go back to Godhead this lifetime, then you must go. Because Rishi Uchu, Krishna upholds the words of the saintly person. Yes. So, in other words, Prabhupada had us at, with the initiation, an additional prayer of back to Godhead this lifetime. That's not necessarily the case in every Gaudiya Vaishnava initiation. In some cases, it could make a connection with the sampradaya, and then, whenever you go back to Godhead, then you go. But Prabhupada had very much this additional point. He prayed on the strength of his prayer this lifetime. I was thinking about that the other day because there are so many people who take all kinds of initiations in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, but are they getting the same thing? And then, what about the grand disciples of Srila Prabhupada and so on? Are they getting it too? Yes, they're getting it because the vow of Prabhupada is still standing. And because they initiate on the same formula. So it's still on the basis. Prabhupada's prayer is still there for this life. Let's just go with the same prayer. Okay, in the same vow. So therefore still could go back to God at this life. But that's an extra bonus. That's not automatically so in every
initiation. It's something that Prabhupada says. I was just thinking about this the other day. I just noted it. Yeah. That's significant. Could be significant, actually. Good argument for just being here, right? And not on the other side of the river or, you know, or somewhere. So, like this, we are carried. So, to go back to an earlier stage of the lecture as a conclusion, there are so many blessings upon us, and so many more than we realize, and therefore we are just dragging our feet. We're just dragging our feet. Oh, it's so difficult, so difficult. Oh, I cannot really do this. 16, and attentive, and this and that. And it's just that little bit of independence that we are still holding back that sort of holds us up from going back to Godhead. Otherwise, everything is ready. It's all set up to go this lifetime. So let us somehow or other take it a little serious, and then all these blessings will act fully. They'll act anyway, but then they'll act fully, and the full result will be attained this time. So easy, actually. It's not hard. Any questions or comments?
Yeah, I have a question about Lord Rama. I remember he's such a sort of person, but still I've heard that he's a kind of form, so in one way he can go back to Krishna all the time, and in one way he could raise.
There are various, of course there are many, many living beings who are taking the post of Lord Brahma. So sometimes the personality that is in that position of Lord Brahma is more exalted than other times. The current Lord Brahma is a pure devotee. And the current Lord Brahma is the head of our sampradaya. And as such, the current Lord Brahma is to be worshipped as a most exalted personality. It is said that there is the our spiritual master, and then the spiritual master of the spiritual master, the Param Guru. It is stated that the Param Guru must be given double the worship of our own Guru. So by the time we get to Lord Brahma, we have to just really worship Lord Brahma. There's no doubt about that. So we should not question the purity of the Lord Brahma that we are, that is the head of our sampradaya. And even if in the Bhagavatam we read some of those stories that Lord Brahma fell prey to the illusory energy, that may have happened on a very, very long duration of time. But because he was so extraordinarily pure, otherwise, even when there was that moment of becoming bewildered by the material energy, then Krishna immediately interfered and made arrangements for his correction. So, that is therefore apichat chudaracharo bhajate mama ananyabhag, is to be overlooked and does not diminish his saintliness at all. So Lord Brahma is the pure transcendental, the current Lord Brahma, the pure transcendental instrument of Krishna. It must be worshipped like that. At other times, the post of Brahma is given to the most pious living being. So such piety doesn't necessarily mean that he is a 100% pure devotee. So then there is still material desire, yes, at the same time. So it is
possible that such Brahmas would gradually, that material desires would slowly bring them down in the universe to those beasts. But this time, beautiful. Yes. Regarding devotional service. They have to be free from any other type of desire, karma and jnana, desire to enjoy this world, desire to escape from this world, etc. So what about the desire to go back to Godhead? Yes, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prayed, Mama Janmani Janmani Swari Bhavadat Bhakti Rahita Kitvai. He desired to come back life after life in the service of Krishna. Yes. So that is the desire of the liberated devotee. So the conditioned devotee must desire to go back to Godhead. Then when he becomes in the course of devotional service, comes to the liberated states, then he may actually start praying Janmani Janmani Swari. Okay, birth after birth, I just simply desire to come back into your service. But in the current situation, we must desire to go back to Godhead, to have a clear focus. Because otherwise, if we now pray, I just desire life after life to be engaged in this world, in your devotional service, then it gets mixed so easy. Just like I was somewhere in the world and there was a really expensive four-wheel drive, you know, one of those like super-duper four-wheel drives. And it had a number plate, for you, Krishna. And I mean, my mind was going, sure. Sure. Right. And even if, you know, if you tell yourself, I'm using it for Krishna, I mean, you know, you may really like using it for Krishna too, isn't it? You know, so therefore, it's still some fruit of desire mixes in. So our focus is back to Godhead. Just we have to really say goodbye to this world first and become detached, and then focus on Krishna, and then we can go all right, life after life. Stay here if you desire so. But it says that Krishna still takes his devotee back to Godhead in the Chaitanya Charitamrita purports. Prabhupada said, because in his heart of hearts, deep in his heart, the devotee still has a desire to see Krishna face to face. And Krishna will therefore fulfill that desire. Even when the devotee prays, wherever you send me, my Lord, to me, I'm your servant. Still, Krishna takes him back to God. Yeah, so, in the conditioned states, yes, I want to go back to God. And we can see that was very important in Prabhupada's mission. I mean, he called his magazine Back to Godhead. And that's not really a name for a magazine. In a sense, you know, magazines usually have short names, like Time, Newsweek, you know, something catchy, you know. I mean, Godhead, you know, would have been like more a title, right? I mean, in a sense, you know, Godhead. So Back to Godhead is very long for a magazine. don't see any magazine with such a long name. Life, you know, just like that. So, but back to God, because it was Prabhupada's motto, right? He wanted, that was very much imprinting that very much as a motto on our way, back to Godhead. So, okay, back to Godhead, yes, back to Godhead. That is what we should do. That's our meditation. We have to, we know that when we take these vows, that we are taking them for a whole life, and we never know what will happen in our life. We know that alone, what will be our chance to make such a vow? I will follow this for my whole life. But we know that if we take shelter of Krishna, that Krishna will help us, and then we can do it. So therefore, what we're really vowing is, we're not just vowing, I will follow these four regulative principles my whole life. What we're really vowing is, I will take shelter of Krishna wherever I am in any situation in life. I will always turn to Krishna again. And then by taking shelter of Krishna, I can follow these four regulative principles. So even when you're working, while working, take shelter of Krishna. You know, even if you have to chant one round in the lunch break to sort of stay alive. Yeah, whatever it takes. Listen to a lecture on the way to work. Something to spiritually sustain us. A little picture of Krishna on your desk, at your watch. You know, the picture of Krishna in the back. Whatever it takes. But by taking shelter of Krishna, are we able to follow the vows? So when we promise, I will follow this for the rest of my life, we know that we can only do it by taking shelter of Krishna. Alone, we have no strength to make such vows. Yeah, that is true. And Prabhupada said that he was very liberal in initiating people. And he said, because I'm prepared to go to hell, Prabhupada said. And I sometimes think about that, and I sometimes say that Prabhupada said he was prepared to go to hell, and in my case, I'm also prepared to go to hell, I guess. There's heavy stuff. Yeah, heavy stuff. That is a fact. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also said that if one takes initiation and one breaks the vows of initiation, that one will get more serious reactions than before, because one is more responsible. But he said, but still, in spite of the fact that one gets these reactions and that one is struggling to follow and so on, he said, and one is not following properly, he said, still, generally, the initiation will still be successful, he says, because it's very powerful. That's also amazing. Even if someone is not following, he'll get heavy reactions, spiritual loss, he'll get reaction, but still, most of the time, it will be successful. Yeah. That's not a license to think, oh, well, then I don't have to be so strict. That's good to know. That should not be the conclusion. Because that would be committing sinful activities on the strength of the Holy Name, seventh offense against the Holy Name. That would be bad. But it's very potent. Okay. Thank you very much, the Prabhupada team.